What is up, everybody? This is Toffee Blues USA, your source for all things Everton, American style. Not even sure what that means, except I don't have a cool accent. Maybe that's what that means. All right, today I am joined by somebody I've been following on Twitter for a while, and now I actually get to have conversations and talk Everton with him. It's Jeff Wallner. Jeff, nice to meet you.
Jerry, likewise. It's a pleasure to be on.
So Jeff, you are based in Cincinnati, Ohio, and you are a sports journalist, yes?
That is correct. Lifelong Cincinnatian, a sports journalist for, this is my 26th year.
And who have you covered in the area? We've talked about this off the air, but I want everybody else to hear. It's just kind of cool.
Well, I've done more baseball than anything. Covered the Cincinnati Reds for 20 years. I've also covered Cincinnati Bengals in the NFL, and also college sports with the University of Cincinnati and also Xavier University here in the city. Currently, I'm also covering our MLS club, FC Cincinnati, who's in their second year and still growing and building with a new stadium opening next year. So a lot of exciting things going on in Cincinnati sports. Of course, this past year has been very strange with fans not being allowed to attend the games. It's been a little bit different, but hopefully 2021 will bring more normalcy.
So just for a little clarification for those of the folks who aren't super familiar with FC Cincinnati. FC Cincinnati was a lower league club that had like some of the best support I've ever seen for an American soccer franchise. They were crazy in Open Cup competitions, and it was so fun to watch them play.
Yeah, they're really it's an amazing story. They started with two guys, Jeff Birding and Dan McNally, sitting at a lunch counter or having coffee or something, and they quite literally drew up the plans to bring a professional soccer franchise to Cincinnati. And we had lower division clubs before, but nothing that was really kind of a substantial with a plan. And they were able to get the University of Cincinnati to buy in, allow them to use Nippert Stadium, which is the football stadium at UC. And they drew 14,000 fans for their USL opener. And soon it became 20, and then it was 25, and then it was 27, and it grew to 33,000, 35,000 for the U.S. Open Cups. Just amazing. And they pretty much put themselves, they weren't even in the running for an MLS franchise. They really kind of just crashed the MLS in many respects. They played Crystal Palace in a friendly and had 35,000 for that, which at the time was the largest crowd to ever attend a soccer match in the state of Ohio. And I think that might still be the case. So just amazing. And they open a new stadium next year. So it's very exciting here from that standpoint.
Yeah. I think I've seen some of the designs for that new stadium. Looks pretty awesome. Pretty exciting
stuff.
I'm
looking forward to it.
So you get to cover your local, I mean, it seems like a pretty sweet gig that you have patiently worked toward, 20 years in sports journalism in your hometown. It's pretty rad situation. Sorry, you were in the middle of saying something. I was like
freelance writing. It's a freelance journalism career. So I kind of built it from the ground up. I had a talent for writing and passion for sports, and just built it into a career that's lasted this long. So it's been quite the journey.
I would imagine freelance, from what I'm gathering, freelance is very intense when it comes to taking matters into your own hands to make sure you get the gigs that you want. You're constantly active. Everybody I've talked to that has done freelance is just so incredibly disciplined. And you know what I mean? Like there's this, it's where you have to really take the bull by the horns and take responsibility for everything. It's not like someone else is building all your structure. you know, for your career. And that's admirable.
Yeah. And the key is to find those clients that become quote unquote full-time freelance, where you're a freelancer, you're not an employee for them, but you become a regular contributor and you're kind of locked into providing them with regular content. And I did that for 13 years for the Cincinnati Enquirer, MajorLeagueBaseball.com, and now WCPO.com, which is Channel 9 in Cincinnati, their website. So you kind of get, and also Cincinnati Soccer Talk right now that I cover FC Cincinnati for. So you, that's the key as a freelancer, finding those clients that you become a regular contributor, where you get to the point where it's almost like you are an employee, even though they're not paying you benefits. That's kind of a differentiating thing there, but that's what you want. And that's kind of how you build a freelance career. I think in any, doesn't matter if it's freelance journalism or photography or art or whatever it is, you know, it's those regular clients that you build those relationships with, and then you're kind of off and running.
So just to reiterate, and I want to make sure, I'm going to repeat this at the end as well, when we're doing all the plugging, but Cincinnati Soccer Talk, that is the show, correct? I want to make sure we go ahead and plug that now. So if you're into what Jeff's throwing down about this Cincinnati soccer, if you're like, you know, I want to learn more about FC Cincinnati, which I know a lot of people overseas have not picked an MLS club yet. Some of them care about that. Some of them don't. But if you do, you may want to check out Jeff, what Jeff's doing over there on Cincinnati Soccer Talk.
Yep. Cincinnati, CincinnatiSoccerTalk.com. It's a website. You can find my stories there. We also have a podcast and a lot of things going on and really active on social media. So you can follow Cincy Soccer Talk on Twitter and kind of follow along.
Awesome. Very cool. So Jeff, a few questions. So Cincinnati Toffees, is that your hometown supporters group? Your Everton supporters
group? That is. Yeah, Cincinnati Toffees was formed around 2014, I believe, by Adam Frazier, who is a Cincinnati resident and native, who taught in Liverpool for a year, and that's how he became a Blue, and he brought it back to America with him and wanted to start a local supporters group here. And if I can, I need to give Adam a shout out. Some people that are watching this probably are already aware, but Adam and his wife, Maria, their young infant daughter, Anastasia, who we affectionately call Little Toffee, is going through some really serious health issues, and they're currently in the ICU, and she's awaiting surgery. So thoughts and prayers from everyone. I know the Blue family has really stepped up. We've seen a lot of things on social media. Everton tweeted something just the other day, some support. So just wanted to give a shout out. Yeah, it was Adam's vision, and he was the one who created Cincinnati Toffees. And we've been growing by leaps and bounds. I feel like we have one of the strongest supporters clubs in the U.S. And we're doing a lot of great things for charity, in addition to having you know, good numbers every match day. Our host pub is Dana Gardens, which is on just off the campus of Xavier University. Mm-hmm. Adam went to Xavier, and he was familiar with the people, friends with the people who run that bar, and got buy-in from them, and they've been just amazing partners for us. They help fund the NB pub pass, so we're sure to having all the matches on TV. They open up at 7 a.m., 7:30 a.m., whatever it takes, midweek matches. They welcome us with open arms, and we make sure that we help reward them for that as well. So it's been great. It really has. And we're drawing more and more Everton supporters every day. And that's what it's all about.
So we have recently, I guess it may have been 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had Jake Holton on. Have you met Jake at any of the Cincinnati Toffees events over there?
Yep. Jake's a good friend of mine, and he is a regular attendee on match days at Dana Gardens. Absolutely. Yeah.
Another nice Cincinnati Toffee. He's a great guy too. Very good. So question. I mean, there's a couple of, you know, we've gotten to have two Cincinnati Everton supporters on here contributing to the program, getting to talk to them. Do you think is there anything about Cincinnati that makes the locals a little more prone to being Everton supporters? Is there something about something about the psychology of the residents there or what?
You know, I don't know. It's funny because when we all get together, and I think all supporters groups kind of probably have a similar story, but when we do all get together, we are all kind of like personalities. So I think there is some commonality. Maybe that would be a book idea at some point. Mm-hmm. Is what personality kind of draws you to Everton? Because obviously, unlike our good friends, you know, in Liverpool and throughout England and other countries that maybe were. Maybe have that kind of generational connection. Either they were born into a blue family or whatever it might be. Obviously, we all chose our club, and as I always say, we could have chosen any club in the world, and we chose this one. And everybody has their reasons why. And I think it would be a really good kind of study of the human condition. Why are we here?
I'm so fascinated by why we all have picked Everton for different reasons, and I constantly ask that. Very cool. So now that we're getting into that, Jeff, why are you a blue? Why are you so blue?
I love telling these stories. I call it my Everton speech. And I told it so many times when I was in Liverpool, because everybody wants to know, how does an American become why Everton? So, but I think I was like most Americans within maybe the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years roughly, where I think the sport really started to take hold in this country. Mm-hmm. And there was just a growing passion for the sport of soccer. And I kind of was kind of, you know, drawn to that as well. So you get to the point where you want to choose a club to support, because there's too many years between World Cups, and you want to have that club to support. And I've always had a close kind of affinity toward England. I listen to a lot of, 90% of the music I listen to is, and even more so now because of my Liverpool connections and the friends I've made in Liverpool, listen to a lot of music from the UK. But so the Premier League was going to be where my club was going to come from. But I think maybe being a journalist, a sports journalist, maybe contributed to it, because I went into it with kind of a thirst for knowledge, and I wanted to know more about how that sport got started in England. And so I kind of looked back at some of the history and saw the clubs that were part of the original football league in 1888, because living in Cincinnati, of course, we have the first professional baseball team. So we kind of started it all, right? So I looked at that, and it was funny because I hadn't heard of a few of the clubs, but Everton jumped off the page because I knew of Everton because of Tim Howard. Mm-hmm. But I made it a point, and I still get, and this might be horrible to say, because I love Tim Howard and I love Landon Donovan and I love everything that they did for Everton. And I think Tim Howard is probably one of our best ambassadors, not just American ambassadors, probably one of the best ambassadors we have for this club. But I still do get a little perturbed when people assume that because I'm American, I'm an Evertonian because of Tim Howard. So I made it a point in the beginning to say, you know, I'm not going to choose Everton because of Tim Howard. I need some other reasons why this would be my club. Now, I got kind of lucky because I was leaning toward Everton being the club I was going to support. And I have a friend here in Cincinnati who I knew was from England, but I didn't really know he was from Liverpool because the conversation really hadn't come up. And it's not, he's not a close friend that I see all the time. But he caught wind on social media that I was looking at the Premier League club, and then I was considering Everton, and I was kind of following Everton at that point. And he said, we need to go out for, you know, a couple of pints and talk about Everton. So he told me story after story about growing up in Liverpool in a family of Blues, generations of Blues. He talked to me about his friends who were Blues. He told me great stories, like, you know, friends who they would always go to the pub on Saturday, but this particular friend, if Everton lost, like, he wouldn't show up at the pub. So, you know, they would say, well, where, you know, where is, I forget his name. It's a, where is so-and-so? And they say, oh, Everton lost today. They're like, oh, okay. So he's not leaving the house for the rest of the weekend. And another friend who didn't own anything red and like nothing red. And he talked about going to matches at Goodison Park, and I grew up going to games at Wrigley Field. And it kind of, there was a connection there because the history kind of drew me. Goodison Park kind of drew me in, you know, an iconic ground, a historic club with a history of success. But that's not, you know, if I was just looking for success, obviously I could have, you know, I had my pick of other clubs. But everything made sense to me. And it's not my nature to just pick a winner. I mean, quote unquote, I mean, we won England 9 times. I don't like saying that. Like, it's not, you know, because Everton is very much a winner. Right. One of the greatest clubs in English football history. We know that. But it's not my nature to just go to the top of the table and say, this is who I'm going to. So just through all of that, I just came drawn to Everton. And then once you start watching the matches and following the matches and you learn more about the School of Science and you start to interact with the fan base and you learn how much this club means to them, to their families, to their lives, and how important it is. And then you get exposed to Everton's kind of role in the community of Liverpool and what the club means to that town and just everything. You know, I fell in love with the club. Now, this part of it, and I've said this thousands of times, I didn't expect this, though. I kind of went into it thinking, you know, I'd have a club to support. I'd find a pub to watch the games. I'd buy a kit. I didn't expect this. So, you know, when you do the tour of Goodison and you go into the dressing room and there's the Alan Ball quote on the wall, right? Once Everton touches you, you know, things are never the same. And they haven't been. I didn't expect this. I didn't at all. When I was sitting at, I think it was at the, we were at the Brick and we're talking. It's like, I can't believe I'm in Liverpool on a match day. I just left Goodison Park sharing pints with people in Liverpool. I would have never imagined 15 years ago, if you'd have said I would have been doing that, I would have said I would have helped pay for your therapy, that I would have flown 4,000 miles to watch, you know, a soccer team play in England. But that's what this club does. And yeah, they become a big part of my life and an important part of my life. And it's just been a wonderful experience. I've made so many friends I've made friends in Cincinnati I never would have met. I've made friends in other parts of the U.S. I never would have met. I have friends in Ireland. I have friends in, obviously, a lot of new friends in Liverpool, other parts of England, that I never would have met had it not been for Everton. Mm-hmm. And I go back and think, what if I would have chosen another club? Or, like, I'm sure there at times people in Liverpool are, what would happen if I was born into another family? Mm-hmm. Like, I just kind of, this club came into my life and I just, I couldn't be happier. And Yeah, that's my Everton story.
It's funny when people tell these kind of stories. Sometimes you get the short version from folks, usually in person. A lot of times when we have the guests on, it's, you know, they're telling it as though it's for the first time, but you tell it with such affection, you know. It's very clear. You're right. I didn't expect to be here. You know what I mean? Doing a show like this. I was not expecting this out of everything. And the fact that, you know, we're connected. We're connected to other people all over this country, all over other countries. There's a connecting bond there that comes from, you know, genuine caring. And it doesn't come from, oh, they're winning, let's go with them. Like, right. I get the vibe that a lot of Everton supporters would be sort of pissed off if they got kind of, if all of a sudden they got this influx of fans a la, you know, some of those other top six teams when they just have a good streak. And all of a sudden there's, you know, I have a feeling they'd be kind of like, when did you become a fan? When did you become a supporter? Are you serious? You know what I mean? It's right.
And we talk about it all the time among the Cincinnati Toffees, because we obviously have friends who support other clubs, and you know, we have our own pub. We're very fortunate in that respect, because there are a couple of massive football pubs in Cincinnati. This is a huge soccer town, obviously. And at those places, you've got you know, a mob of United fans in one part, you've got a mob of Arsenal fans in another part, you've got a mob of people supporting our friends across the park in another part. But they only talk to the people that they come to the bar with. You know, mm-hmm. They kind of go to the bar with their friends and they wear their, you know, their United kits or whatever, and they kind of hang out with their friends at the... Whereas if you come to Dana Gardens on a match day, especially if it's a derby or it's a, you know, like a lot of time we get bigger crowds, obviously, for the 10 o'clock and the, you know, the 12:30 matches than we do for the 7:30. but if you come to our pub, it's a community of all like-minded individuals. And if you're not a friend, if you're not our friend when you first come in, you will be by the time you leave. So it's just it's a whole different experience. And you mentioned kind of the connection. You can see it on social media. Isn't it remarkable how anytime somebody pops up on social media and says something like, you know, I'm looking to choose a club and I'm thinking about Everton. It's like a social media, like nuclear, like bomb goes off.
Who was the guy in Texas that is one of our fans now?
I had one guy who here in Cincinnati who did that, and I DM'd him on Twitter and said, you do realize that right now you're getting tweets from people in Ireland, yep, people in Australia, people in, like, you know, all over England. He's like, what? It's like, yeah, because you said you're going to be an Everton fan. So I said, you can't back out of this. Like, once you're in, you're in. I was like, get ready for a few days of everyone bombarding you with Everton information. Just sit back and read it. You won't even have to touch a key. Yep. Like, it's coming. It's like, and he messaged me like a day or two later, and he's like, this Everton is crazy. And no other club has that kind of social network or social connection.
Yeah, I think the guy was mentioning, I think it was, his name is a guy named James Rodriguez, and people were tweeting at him. He was like, hey, I'm not that guy. And then, I'm not the same guy. And now he's like an Everton supporter now or something. It's such a crazy story. So cool.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, by the way. If for some reason us being at the top of the table ends up getting us more Blues who end up being really committed, and we're able to connect with them, it doesn't make them less of supporters. I want to make sure that, you know, I was just saying that there may be some furrowed brows early on, you know, where kind of like you came win, but you know, people, you know, I feel like when you support anybody, you earn your way by caring. You earn your way by, with your support, you earn your way in by giving a shit, you know. It's very, you know, I always like furrow my brow. I remember I've got a girl I went to school with who started telling me she's a Liverpool supporter, and she would cheer after a derby, and I was just like, do you know who's on your team? Do you even know who's on your team? It would just piss me off every time. Like, you're just calling me out on social media in front of everybody because you like the Beatles, and that's why you like Liverpool, and that's only half the story, because it doesn't make any sense. You don't even, oh my gosh, it just ticked me off. So little stuff like that, whatever. But I feel like I think for us,
it doesn't matter. Like, I think, just because James is on the club, like all of a sudden we're Colombia's team, and that's great.
That's neat.
We might joke about it. I felt bad one day recently because I made, when we were top of the table, and I think I made a comment that, you know, I said, well, welcome all the new Everton fans, and pointed out that I was, you know, I was here for Ashley Williams's entire career. So
it's almost
but then I felt bad. I said, oh, I hope people don't, and then I thought, well, you know, hopefully people don't take that wrong, because you know, if you're a blue, you're a blue. And
yeah, exactly.
And once you become a part of this, you'll find out very quickly that, you know, we're not here for the, you know, we're not here for the glory. We're here for Everton, and we're here and Everton means, you know, is kind of all encompassing. It's not necessarily just the, you know, we play, you know, one match a week, the last 2 hours. Well, we're Evertonians the entire week. So it's a different experience. And I don't think we'll lose that experience. Now, I am a little nervous, but, you know, moving into Bramley Moor and how kind of the mystique of the club might change, and that's fine. You know, that's the price of progress, right? I'm extremely excited about Bramley Moor and everything that's going to bring to Everton and really solidifying our future as a club. And I'm also excited about what the stadium's going to bring to the city of Liverpool, which badly needs a boost. But when we move out of Goodison, it'll be different. It'd be kind of like the Red Sox moving out of Fenway Park or the Cubs moving out of Wrigley Field to offer a American baseball reference. But so it'll be different, but we'll still be Everton at the core. So.
Huge fan of your comparing and likening Wrigley to Goodison. For some reason, that just really speaks to me. It's just a really good comparison.
It feels the same to me. It just does. Being like tightly compacted into its neighborhood, you walk around Goodison Park and you feel kind of like you're in Wrigleyville. Now, Wrigleyville now has changed a lot, but when I was a kid, we didn't have lights and we didn't have the hotel and all the stuff that's there now. It feels a lot like Wrigley Field.
Cool. Very cool.
The blue seats, like everything, it did. It was the eeriest thing. And when I walked up the steps and saw the pitch for the first time, immediately flashback to the first time my dad took me to Wrigley Field.
That's an awesome feeling. Because
at Wrigley, you also walk, you know, you walk out of the concourse and then you go up steps to get to the field. Just like Goodison, we walk down the hallway, you go up the steps to get up to the pitch. And as you come up the steps, you start to see the grass and then you see the stands kind of rise up. I was like, oh my, this is the same thing. I was like, I was preordained for this.
That's so great. I love it.
I didn't know it, but I was preordained. Yeah. I was chosen.
Oh, love these stories. So, really quick, just to connect Everton to your personality, if you had an Everton player from Everton's history that's like Jeff's personality incarnate, Which Everton player is you?
Wow. That's a really cool question. That's a really cool question. I could make it easy and go and say I'm the Dixie Dean of, but I, or I'm the, yeah, the Kendall Harvey or Ball. You know what? The more, and I don't know how much I can expound on this, but just watching his style and I love the nickname. I'll go with the Golden Vision. So I'll go with Alex Young. I'll go with the Golden Vision.
Wow. Okay. This is,
and that's going way back. Were you expecting something more recent?
No. I want you to go with whatever you feel like links.
Because I love the guys from the 80s. I would love to have pints with that group.
You realize I'm in the process right now of like studying this. Hold on. This is my recent study. I just got this from Tony. Nice. This is me studying. I'm doing my homework right now on my 80s Everton. So yeah.
I loved how they were talking about going to the Chinese restaurant, and that's where they kind of aired their grievances as a club.
Everyone should do that.
Kendall would take him to the Chinese restaurant, and they would kind of, you know, you're shit or whatever. And that's how they aired their grievances. I would have also been a fly on the wall and heard those. But yeah, that group, club.
So Jeff is the Golden Vision. This is the Golden Vision. I like it. Oh, very
it's more cool. Well, it's more of a gray vision, but like, you know, I'll go with
join
I'll
the
go.
Club on that though, man. It's right. very oh, well, okay.
The ball with great precision. Yeah. Good
stuff. So, and currently, who's your favorite Everton player on the squad right now?
Oh, wow. Wow, that's, you know, that's kind of tough because I kind of look at them collectively as Everton.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an interesting call. Yeah. You know, nobody where you're like, that right there, that's my style of player right now on the team.
Yeah, because like if I look at when I first started being a fan and the players that I gravitated toward, like Tim Cahill, mm-hmm. Mikel Arteta, that's a tough question, but I guess I had to pick, I'd go with Richarlison, and maybe not as much for the, I'll go with Richarlison and kind of here's why, not just because of his ability to create and score goals, you know, or even his ability, uncanny ability for a player in his position to have the willingness to make tackles, mm-hmm. the tenacity to win a ball. But also he has like a humility about him on social media. You talk about a charming young guy. He understands what it means to be an Evertonian. He interacts with the fans so well. So like all encompassing, I'd probably go with Richarlison, but that's a tough question to answer. You know, it's funny because you wouldn't, if you're a fan of a team, usually people always have a favorite player, right?
Yeah.
But that kind of
I don't know what my answer is right off the cuff. I've been asking this for weeks. Jeff.
That kind of stumped me. I'm like, I don't know.
Okay. And last question. It's not Everton based, or is it? In what subject are you a secret expert? And can you recommend me anything in that subject?
I have a lot of like wide ranging interests, but I am very much a space nerd. I am big into the search for, I'm not a UFO alien guy. Mm-hmm. I always have to kind of preface it. I'm not a UFO alien guy. I'm more of a kind of interested in the planet hunting process. Interested in the search for like microbial life on other planets. I'm fascinated by it. I was watching a show on, I think it might've been the Science Channel or maybe Discovery last night. And I'm sitting there watching the show for an hour and they're talking about like, you know, trying to find habitable planets. And
That would be a cool show. That would be a cool show. I would love that.
So yeah, I'm a major space nerd. And then a huge music buff. So.
Okay. So space nerd or music buff right now. Okay. What's the space nerd show you were watching really quick? I need to write this down. What was that?
How the Universe Works. It's a really good, this particular episode was just dealt with trying to find evidence of life on other planets, but How the Universe Works is outstanding show. It's usually an hour long, I think. Mm-hmm. And they talk about planet formation and black holes. And
okay. That would be cool. Really,
yeah. It's great nerdy. It's top drawer nerdy stuff.
I'm down with watching a little bit of that. That sounds pretty cool. And since you're a music buff, give me an album. Give me an album really quick. I haven't heard of. Give me something I
that
can
you
explore.
Haven't heard of.
If you're wow. If you're a nerd, chances are
well,
I haven't heard of it.
I mean,
music buff, yeah.
Well, one of my favorite Liverpool bands that I've actually gotten to know, their drummer Neil Lawson is a Blue. He's an Evertonian. The rest of the band are, you know, fans of Our Neighbors Across the Park. But we won't talk about that.
Gotcha.
But the band name is Red Rum Club. And a lot of people watching this probably will have heard of them.
Cool.
If they're from Liverpool or exposed to them. But they have a new album out called The Hollow of Humdrum. And it is outstanding.
I'm on it. Very cool. Yeah. All right, good stuff. All right, so I've got more ways of enriching my life. Thank you, Jeff. All right, we're going to move on.
Happy to help out.
I appreciate that, man. That's awesome. we got to talk Man United. Sadly, it happened. Spoiler alert, if you for some reason have been living under a patch of moss since Saturday, here's what happened. 2-1 loss. We lost. 3-1 loss. Gosh, it felt like 2-1 though. Gosh.
It was 2-1.
2-1. I agree with Jeff. Cavani never happened. So Jeff, really quick, some talking points. And you pick where you want to start. Number one, your man of the match, who you felt like had a good game. Number two, Bernard's combinations and how well he combines with Luca Dean, if you feel like that's worth talking about. Number three, the gap between Holgate and Keane, both literal and possible communication-wise. Next, the lack of dangerous opportunities. And anything else that might strike your fancy. So hopefully I've got your brain going. Where do you want to start?
We can start with Bernard and Dean. I thought that was a really, you know, dynamic combination on the left, and it was there for a great deal of the first half, right? And then it kind of, I mean, we weren't able to, you know, to really capitalize on, well, you know, Bernard had the goal. Right. It's interesting. Bernard's interesting because I don't know where he fits long term on the club. I know that depth is something that we badly need. Of course, that's been very, very evident the past three matches. But I think he has a lot to offer. But I think he also has a lot to offer another club that's going to give him, more playing time. And obviously, we need flexibility financially to fill the needs that we need as well. But I thought that link up was outstanding. I wish we could have, created or taken better advantage of that.
We get that combination a lot with the two of them coming up the wing, and it usually leads to a Luca Dean cross. And I know last season, a lot of times we were running 4-4-2. So a lot of times we had two people in the box for those crosses, right? And this time it wasn't that as much. Although I will say Calvert-Lewin was really good in the air as far as winning 50-50s during the game. He actually sort of got an assist mm-hmm. on winning that goal kick off of Pickford straight up route one, going to Bernard.
Right.
It's just a strange thing, Bernard. It's like you look at his work with Luka Dean, and you're kind of like, in theory, you're like, okay, well, he brings something different to Richarlison. Shouldn't he be a nice gear shift? If for some reason we want to go a different direction, let Richarlison, sub, and then you bring in Bernard, who brings something different. But almost like if we do that, we need to bring in someone like Richarlison on the opposite side. You know what I mean? And so it's like because we got Hamas on the right, who is a straight-up playmaker, and we almost need someone kind of crashing in who's got more speed that can kind of help win those Luka Dean crosses if we need it. It's just kind of a weird – you're right. Bernard's a conundrum. I don't get it.
I think I get the impression that Carlo has, as I think a lot of people do, but I mean, he's had ample time to prove that he's certainly a capable player in the Premier League. But you get the impression that Carlo doesn't believe that physically that he can handle. You look at the opportunities that he's gotten, which is few and far between, and in situations where you would expect him to get opportunities, he's not. So I don't know if Carlo has reservations about, you know, what he can handle and how much he can contribute physically. He's obviously has the pace and he's very skilled with the ball. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of where he lands and honestly how long he's with Everton.
Yeah. He's a player I like, but I've been excited about him since we got him. And I felt like that first year he was really forging a really nice partnership with Luka Dean on the left. And it was just really fun to watch develop. But formations having to shift and different things happening and injuries happen and just mm-hmm. things have changed. And this season's formation change has not been great for Bernard. And especially Richarlison kind of taking up his older position of that left forward. It just changes some things. It's a tough one because I think he was one of our strongest contributors in the first half. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, no question.
Weird match. All right. Where do you want to go?
What were other choices?
If you want to go through who your man of the match was, if you want to talk about the disconnect, the gap between Holgate and Keane, what you feel like maybe at fault for us not having a lot of really dangerous opportunities, or if you get something where you're just like, you haven't mentioned this, Jerry.
Well, I think if I kind of feel like going maybe a little bigger picture, and when I say big picture, I just mean the last three matches. Look, my fear going into the Derby is not as much whether we're going to win or lose or what's going to occur within that game. It's how that match is going to impact us the following week.
That's a good point.
Now, coming out of that match, I really should have been concerned about how it was going to affect us for the next 3 weeks because – through this past match against United, we were still feeling the ramifications of the Derby. We have a James Rodriguez who's not fully fit, right, and we have a Richarlison who was out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, James got hurt in the Derby. Richarlison got suspended. We went through the Pickford thing. There's no way to know how that was maybe impacting him. Obviously, we know it was to some extent because he sat the one match. But we also don't know how it impacted the rest of the club. Right. We've been dealing with Derby fallout, and I hate to say that, for the last three matches. Mm-hmm. And you never want that to happen, but we see it happen in rivalry games in all sports. You play 38 matches. We only play them twice. And I know it's important. And I know we want to beat them more than we want to beat anyone else. But you can't let it impact you because you play 38 matches. And we've been dealing with the fallout of that match for the last 3 weeks.
So,
and
Jeff, that's just
frustrating to me.
But I get it. I guess my question is, a lot of times this stuff is psychological, you know, kind of, you know, it's a bit of a hit. It's your first non-win the season. But also there's a lot of other stuff that hits psychologically. But also there's the fact that, you know, we're not a deep squad.
Right.
And pretty much if we have anything that is damaging, like psychologically or injury wise, for us to be able to overcome that, it's going to be hard when mm-hmm. Luka Dean's out. Yeah. I mean, Luka Dean, that was the next game. Obviously he got the red card.
Right.
And we had Nkunku come in, but he's young, you know, we had Pickford out for a game and it wasn't immediately after that, but he had some psychological stuff going on, I'm sure. Richarlison being out, James Rodriguez being injured, who's replacing those guys? We don't know. You right. know what I mean? And so there's a lot of – we're just not a deep squad. And a Darby is going to every time have that psychological and physical impact. It's going to be both, right? It's going to be the chippiest game you play, or it should be, one would think. The chippiest, snidiest game you play all year is the Derby, and it's going to be the one that the most emotionally wrenching, right? And so it's how you recover from that, both depth and personally and all that. It's a lot. So I guess, is it – do you feel like it's
– I went into that match, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. You're rolling. I don't want to mess that up.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Oh no, that's fine. Your video kind of paused for a little bit. So, I was just going to say that I went into the Derby, and I wasn't my primary concern going into that match. Don't get anybody sent off.
Yeah.
Don't lose anyone. And we ended up losing Richarlison. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of talk about. And we'll talk about Anthony Gordon in a bit, but mm-hmm. we're talking a lot about Richarlison and what we miss with him and why a small sample size, but it's gotten a lot of attention, 8 matches and we've lost them all when he hasn't played. There's been a lot of focus on what he brings offensively and what we missed offensively with him not being in there. I don't think there's been as much talk about what we missed defensively, not having him in there, because he does things that so few players in his position would do. He's willing to make a tackle risky at times. He's tenacious at winning the ball back. He brings an energy and a passion to the game that is infectious and impacts every other player on the pitch. I don't know how we replace him, but we need to figure out how we're going to replace him, either with a player who is on the club now or with a player that we bring in, because his style also lends him to injury. It also lends him to cards. And he's a guy that every time he goes out there, he's at risk of missing a game or two or three. You have to have some assurance for Richarlison. And I don't know, you can't replace him like for like. And I think Carlo might've said that. He's like, you know, it's impossible to replace him. I think he might've used the word impossible because of all the things he does. It would be different if he was just, you know, a goal scorer but his impact on the club, that one guy, it's immense. I don't know how you replace him, but obviously the popular choice is Anthony Gordon, and I don't deny that, but I also wonder, kind of like Bernard, if Carlo Ancelotti isn't bringing you in when you think you should, It's real hard. And I'm going to go, and I'm going to go sport. And I'm kind of, I keep kind of taking us into the Anthony Gordon. I don't even know if we were ready to do that, but I'm running my own show here.
hey, do what you got to do. It'll be all right.
But in my, in my experience, you know, covering sports as a journalist, there are always players on every team in every sport where you think, man, when this guy gets in, he's great. So why doesn't he play all the time? And it's difficult because sometimes a coach or manager will tell you. Most times they won't, because they'll keep that private. And unless you are at practice or at training, which, you know, in England, they're not. You know, everyone who's speculating, obviously the fans aren't at training, but neither is media.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what is happening Sunday to Friday with Anthony Gordon.
Right.
And the things that are expected of him from Carlo Ancelotti. And it's easy for fans to say, but put him in there. But there are a lot of reasons why managers in every sport play one guy over another.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of reasons for that we may never have visibility to. And obviously Carlo Ancelotti has forgot more about football than, you know, almost anyone
yeah.
knows. But I watch Anthony Gordon play, and sure, I see a like replacement. I also see a young guy who probably needs an opportunity. I don't know how it benefits him to not get those chances to play, but that's a difficult thing, because that has to be a priority. Finding somebody to be insurance for Richarlison. And if it's Anthony Gordon, that's fine. But if it's not Anthony Gordon, then we need to be looking. That just needs to be a priority, and you need to look elsewhere, because that's going to be important. As we've seen, Richarlison, you can't have one guy go down and see the impact. Now, these last three matches, we've had a lot of other stuff going on. I mean, the injuries have been through the roof. We had the Pickford thing. We had
two red cards.
James missing a match, but James also not being 100% fit. So we've had a lot of things going on. And we played a Southampton team that was flying high. We played a United team that had to win. I would argue they needed that win more than we did.
Mm.
I hate to say that, but
I think you can, though. I think you can say that. I mean, really, they had a manager who's more up against the wall. I made the classic mistake of joking about, oh, the biggest threat they have is Fernandez at the penalty line. Ha, ha, ha. And then he scores two goals, not from penalties. And I'm like, oh, you jinx. Way to go, Jerry. But yeah, I mean, and so want to get back to Gordon later, because I do think there's more to say about Gordon. Mm-hmm. I do think there's more to talk about with him. But now that we brought it back around to the United, and how it was a situation where we didn't create a lot without Richarlison. If we don't, in a situation like this, where we're not doing a like-for-like replacement with Richarlison in the match, is there a way? It seems like the plan is not to like-for-like replace him in these type of games. It seems like the plan is to figure out how to somehow replace the attacking opportunities.
Right.
But we still have not figured out chemistry-wise. We haven't figured out how to do that. And we also, every single week, it seems like, we're having some problems defensively in having a different combination of back four. Like this week, we had Keane playing at a different center half role, Holgate coming in, all right, mm-hmm. who hasn't played for a while. And right. I think we did suffer from, you know, the fact, I mean, they got split they got split twice, okay? Even though Rashford didn't get the head on the second one, let's be honest, Pickford, if Radford had got a Rashford had got a head on it, it still would have gone in. But those, they were split. They were split easily, and that's a communication issue. That's on one of those guys. Now, I would also make a call on that one that Coleman probably should have covered up the first goal. Coleman should have covered up the cross, right? Shaw's cross. Coleman could have done a better job of closing down that cross. But it's a situation where I feel like our I don't know if our attack is the entire problem right now. I think if we stay strong defensively, I mean, that's, we get a win on that one, right?
I think that Carlo, it certainly appeared against Newcastle. Of course, they get the penalty, but I think against Newcastle, he was looking to get a result.
Yeah.
And going into that match, I thought if we come away with a 0-0 draw, I would take that. I would take that result all day because of the situation the roster was in. But yeah, you against United, so you had James coming back off injury, right? Coleman coming back off injury. Holgate coming back off injury. Now they had trained, obviously, but Coleman had a bad day. I mean, Coleman, I don't think Coleman had a good day.
And I was borderline about Coleman because sometimes they would like dazzle offensively. And I was like, wow, there's a player trying to take people on 1v1. That's right. Crazy. None of us, we never do that. So I was like, wow, that's great. But then he would kind of make a mental lapse here or there. Right. So I was kind of divided about him.
And we were all excited to see Holgate back in, but the more I watched, the more I thought, was he ready to come back in?
Yeah.
And I didn't notice James was so apparent those first few matches. It was so obvious that everything was getting created through him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe it's because all eyes were on him, but I think it was, he was not apparent. He was not a part of the match. And I wonder if clubs can just, especially with Richarlison not in there, if you can just decide, we're not going to allow this guy to create, we're taking him out of the equation.
Yeah.
Then what do you do?
See, that's actually what I thought you were leading to, is the fact that, I mean, do they want us to play up the left? Do they want us to play through Bernard? And, I mean, because how many times did you see James with the ball near the box?
Right.
Rarely, right? You saw him getting the ball just past midfield, couldn't do much, and he would play usually a beautiful cross-field ball to someone just perfect. But at the same time, it's like, what happened after that? And you didn't really see him doing a lot near the box at all. It's almost like they wanted it on that side. They wanted it over there. And then when we would cross the ball in, inevitably, we didn't really have many numbers in there. And they have, you know, and they cleared it out pretty easily, usually. So, yeah, it was weird, man. It was a weird, weird game. But I do think our defense could use some stability, you know, some week in, some week out, let's get used to each other again type of stability.
Even during that good start to the season, I think we were all saying, you know, this is great, but we're leaking a lot of goals.
Yeah.
So that's fine if you're scoring four or five a game, but yeah. Then all of a sudden, you know, you've got the injuries and you're not creating as many chances, and then you're in, you know, then you're in trouble. But yeah, I was excited to see Holgate back in there, but it didn't look like he was ready to be back.
Yeah, it looked like they just could use a little bit more refinement on the defensive partnership, communicating, knowing where to be, knowing who's around you. Being able to lock that kind of stuff down.
I think the break is coming at a good, it's yes. coming at a good time.
Agreed.
You know, I don't like going into breaks. You never like going into a break off a loss, or certainly off three straight losses. And it feels like we're in this position often, but we always seem to have that match coming out of the break that you think, okay, well, that's a match we should win, but what if we don't? And where will we be if we, that's four straight, a loss to Fulham, you know, if we drop into the bottom, like, so you have 2 weeks to fret, you know, we went from, you know, top of the world to now we're worried about Fulham. But that's right. life as an Evertonian. So
yeah, right now I'm just like, get back healthy, guys. Come on.
It would be my feeling right now, and I'm a glass half full guy. I've always been a glass half full guy. So social media does not do well with me because I'm just, social media is not glass half full most of the time. I'm glad I have my mates from the County Road Bobblers, because they're typically glass half full. Nice. Amid a lot of other negativity, they tend to be voices of reason. But this was not a normal three matches, so I'm hanging my hat on that. It'd be one thing if you had everybody healthy and we're in a three-game slide and we're looking for answers.
Right.
We know what the answers are. We need to get Richarlison back in there, and get the guys that were hurt back to 100% fitness, James, Coleman, Holgate, and Carlo's got a couple weeks to come up with some solutions. And you go out and you get 3 points against Fulham, and you're back, you know, you're fifth or sixth, and all of a sudden all your, you know, your goals are right in front of you. And I've been saying since the beginning of the year, our goal is top six. It's been top six since the start of the season. We need to get back to Europe. That's a rightful place. Anything above and beyond that, that's fine. We're allowed to dream. And we were dreaming after that fast start. But our goal is top six. All of our goals are right there for us. The top four is wide open. So we're not out of the running for anything right now.
Right.
We're only 8 matches in. And so that's my motivational, my motivational uplifting speech for the day.
Well, and the thing that I keep telling myself is we're still building a squad as well. There's going to come a time next year where we drop a player and we'll have somebody that comes off the bench who slides right in, you know, and it's not going to be as big a deal as it felt like it was this little stretch. We're still building.
I feel like there will be some additions in January. I've seen, you know, some of the rumors, and obviously you can only get so much done in January, but you can bring in an important piece. And I think the next window is obviously going to be a window of some more attrition, but it's going to be also a window where we need to establish depth. There's a foundation for the squad that's built, but you have to build depth. And in order to build depth, there's going to have to be some attrition. And that's what the focus is going to be in the next window. But we're fine. I'm excited about what's going to come in these next 30 matches. So as excited as I've been ever, I mean, really at any other point in my life as an Evertonian, to be very honest.
My entire family is ecstatic right now, despite a little slide. Just saying. And I think the perspective of this is not a typical three games is, I think that's a very lucid point. I think we need to keep that in mind. Right.
Yeah.
Anything else on United result?
No, let's move on from United.
All right. I'm going to throw this card. We can never discuss again. All right.
There you go.
Boom. Not a good throw. Even there we go. Gotta go over the monitor. All right. So mailbag. I'm gonna give some short, thoughtful answers. I mean, Jeff will give thoughtful answers. Mine will probably be ludicrous. But let's see what we can do. This one's actually for you. Specifically for you.
What?
It's from Everton, Chicago. I think this seems like a very Tony question.
He's setting me up. Setting me up.
Nah. So he says, what does Jeff...
Tony wouldn't do that. Go ahead.
He says, what does Jeff think about opportunities for the club and fan club network to grow in North America?
Wow. Well...
I was going to say, I don't know... This can't be. I realize you could probably talk about this for about 3 hours.
This is its own show. But I do like the commitment that the club is making to do that. And there's been a lot of outreach, I know, to North America. And particularly the United States to help facilitate that growth. Look, like I was talking about Cincinnati Toffees earlier, that's a similar story to all the supporters groups in the US. We've been doing this largely on our own.
Mm-hmm.
Everton USA, completely grassroots organization. The supporters groups all over the country here are all grassroots. We've started this from nothing and then, you know, built membership kind of on our own, did our own networking. And it's not that the club hasn't helped at all, but we're seeing now a commitment to doing that and what Tony Sampson's involved in. And we've got the fan engagement team and there's been a lot of communication and a lot of feedback going back and forth between the club and the supporters groups in the U.S. about ways to grow the membership and grow the support, because the club can only benefit from this, whether it be merchandising, whether, let's be honest, the city of Liverpool has a stake as well, because we're talking tourism as well. So it's a good thing for all concerned. And also I'll throw out Everton and the community. I know the Cincinnati Toffees, we've done we've had a few initiatives where we've raffled off things or raised money for Everton and the community. That money goes directly to them and benefits their ventures. So we're all kind of in this together. And I think it's getting stronger. It's going to continue to build. I've always said, I love that Everton is a very provincial club. That's one of the things that drew me to them, that they are Liverpool's club, Liverpool's first club, and what it means to the people that, that grew up there and live there. But there are a lot of people around the world that love Everton too. And I think it's great that the club is now reaching out and kind of helping to perpetuate that. And maybe the result will be a preseason tour in the U.S. Haven't had one in a while. Hint, hint.
Kidding.
I know they were trying. It sounds like they were trying to get something done. And then, of course, COVID hit. So once we come out of the pandemic, maybe they'll make that a reality.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with coming over and playing somebody here at Wake Forest University here in Winston-Salem. You know, nothing wrong with don't make me go all over the country to see you, Everton. It would be so expensive.
Somebody asked me kind of in the reverse. Somebody asked me, well, what's the first thing you're going to do when if COVID went away today, what's the first thing you do? And I was like, well, I book a plane flight to Liverpool. So
I'm hoping for next year. Fingers crossed for my first time next
fingers
year.
Fingers crossed. So let's get the, let's get the fans back to Goodison. They certainly deserve to be there. And once it's safe, the moment it's safe, I want to see that sea of blue again at Goodison Park.
Oh, yeah. You want to hear the real shouts at the referee instead of the canned ones.
Right.
Very good. Very good stuff. So this next person, I can't even read my own writing. Mark Keaton 112, I think that's the person's name. America's best, or Everton's best American signing.
Everton's best American signing. Well, I mean,
are you going to go there?
Tim Howard.
Are you going there?
I mean,
I knew you'd go there. Yeah. That's where I would go. I mean, it's.
I mean, yeah, it would obviously have to be Tim Howard, but man, Landon Donovan was magic for
yeah. A hot little minute, right?
He was magic. he was magic there for a short while, but yeah, Tim Howard, and not just what he did in goal, obviously, but we talked about a little bit earlier, just how he embraced. It's amazing. You read his, I've got his book right behind me, but you read
it right
book
over there too. Yeah.
Yeah. And the chapter where he talks about Everton, and you get chills, and mm-hmm. you have to remind yourself, this is an American player talking about Everton. I mean, that club grabbed him, and he's embraced the club, and he's been such an ambassador for Everton. And every time he talks about Everton, you can almost see kind of the way he kind of glows when he talks about the fans and he talks about Goodison Park. So
I feel like, it's burning him up whenever we're playing poorly and he's like having to do commentary and talk to Rebecca Lowe about how poorly we're playing. You know, it's burning him up.
I watched the video of his, I don't know if anybody else does this, but I just watch, like, it just helps me feel better. I just go watch like old videos of like I watched the Nikita Jelovic with the video where it shows like all of his Premier League goals. I just sit there and watch.
Those are, we watch those as a family just because we like that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Every goal that Nikita Jelovic scores, I just, sit there and watch it. But, the goal that, Tim Howard scored on that crazy windy day, I watch that video every once in a while.
And he's actually really like humble about that. He's kind of like, gosh, I felt so bad for the other keeper, like he came from that angle and it's like, good for you, Tim. Jeez. Right.
I don't think Rooney felt bad for Joe Hart though when he scored the one. But I watch that occasionally too. But I like watching Tim Howard's windblown goal at Goodison.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Very cool. So you're not going with Joe Max Moore, no Landon Donovan, no Brian McBride, and do we count? Hey, hold on, does Preki count?
No,
I wasn't sure if Preki counted. I thought he came from. I just wasn't sure. I was like, I wasn't sure. So it's one of those things. I was like, I wonder, knowing Jeff, going old school with some of these. Like, will he go Preki? I was really curious.
I love old school.
Yeah,
love old school.
All right. So next, Amy Davies, 61. What's your opinion on how the season's gone so far?
Well, I think. I mean, I don't like looking at a sitting seventh, but the reality of the situation is, every club is, everything is up for grabs this year. It's so wide open. If you told me at the start of the season, this is where we would be, what are we, 3 points or 5 points off top or at this point?
I'm not sure this.
I know we're sitting seventh, but we're maybe 3 points out of Champions League spot.
Mm-hmm.
If you told me at the start of the season that this is where we would be after 8 matches, I wouldn't fret too much. Mm-hmm. I would feel actually pretty decent about it. Sports is funny because it's all about perspective, right? It's about your current form. So if you if you look at where you are and you don't feel good about it because you've lost the last 3 matches and you were top of the league. But if at the start of the season somebody said you'd be sitting seventh and you'd be within, a win of a Champions League spot, you would probably be okay with it, considering, all the new faces that had come in and you knew there would be some improvement and that would be an improvement. So I feel encouraged because we saw this team play for, and I'll even count the Derby to an extent. You saw during that unbeaten streak what this club can do. Just need time to improve things and you know, this scene, this season is not a be all end all. As we talked about, this is a process,
right?
And we know we need to build more depth into the squad. We have more attrition that needs to take place. But I'm excited. I think this club intact can really make a serious run at some point. And I was talking to somebody the other day where I said that I thought that, you know, in January, I could see this club really going on a crazy roll. The December fixture load is a little rough.
Yeah.
I could see in January or February them really going on a roll. The key is just stay within striking distance of your goals, and I think they will be.
Yeah, I'm really – depth has always been my biggest concern with this season. And the hope is we can get a little bit more in January. Speaking of which, Michael Bone won. Besides center mid and goalkeeper, center mid? That can't be necessarily right. Maybe they mean – I'm wondering which center mid position they're talking about, that Michael's talking about. Besides center mid and goalkeeper, what positions do we need? I'm a little hesitant that we need center mid at the moment. I'll say that. Maybe he's talking about an attacking center mid. You know, maybe he's thinking like that. Right. And thinking that we need someone to replace the Gomez Sigurdsson situation. Maybe that's what he's Michael's thinking. And there's a backup question to that as well about our defensive organization that we can hit on in a second. But what other positions do you feel like really quickly you feel like need a little bit of bolstering?
I'm still not sure on the goalkeeper. I think we need some insurance there, but maybe Pickford's his whole show as well. We need to set aside an entire show to talk about Jordan Pickford.
That's a good point. Pickford is that's a deep conversation. It could go a lot of places.
I think, and I hate to, because I think, you know, Cenk Tosun's a quality player, but that's kind of what we're talking about, right? We have Gylfi Sigurdsson on the books. We have Cenk Tosun on the books. Andre Gomes has been really good. He had the injury really kind of abruptly paused what I thought was really having an outstanding season, and I thought he came back and played well at a few points after the injury. But I think you have to need Cenk Tosun can't be your solution off the bench.
No, I don't think he's meant to be, by the way. I think that's the way.
No, the injury, I think that's just the reality of the, right, the reality of the situation. And, you know, Gylfi Sigurdsson is an interesting one as well, because I'm inclined to say, well, that needs to be part of the attrition, although it might be difficult to move him. But Carlo seemed to have an affinity, for him,
right.
Judging by, you know, how he uses him. So, yeah. I just don't, I really look at a specific position. I think we need depth at all positions. That might be kind of a cop-out answer, but I think it's factual though. I think our starting 11 is strong. Everybody healthy. I think we have a really good club. It just goes back to depth. We need depth at every position, and quality depth. That's where it gets difficult though, because that's a tough sell. We're not yet to the point of a club, and I think this kind of speaks to why it's so important for us to get back to Europe this year. And kind of start there, but it's kind of a tough sell for a quality player to say, okay, you're a depth piece at Everton.
Yeah, totally true, which is why I think Keane's not with our club right now. Because I think if Moise Keane was cool with coming off the bench, he'd be here, and he would not be on loan with PSG. I think if he was cool with working his way through –
But he's better. Yeah. But he's better off. He's better off being there, and we're better off with him being there.
Maybe in the long run, financially. Yeah. I was hoping. I love the idea of being able to just throw him in there, though. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was one of those things that we're calling out for some striker help right now, mm-hmm. and that is, you know, one of those things. I'm wondering if we move Jake Tosin along, is striker a situation? If we move John Joe Kenny right now, I feel like we're charging a lot for him. But if we move John Joe Kenny on, we do need a right back assessment. Coleman's older. We need to feel really warm and fuzzy about whoever's backing him up. The goalkeeper, right. Then, by the way, for January, I don't think we need a goalkeeper. I'm thinking more like in May. So if mm-hmm. Robin Olsen moves back, if right. we choose not to – by the way, he looked great, by the way, the other day. Olsen looked great.
Mm-hmm. I thought so. Yeah.
That was cool. So I'd be – if he ends up being a keeper we bring in May on the permanent side, if he ends up having a good – hey, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's a – and he's a different feel to Pickford. Yeah. And I feel like he's just a veteran, and he's level-headed, it seems.
Yeah. And I try not to get too enamored with the U23s.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that you don't really know. You can watch these guys play. You don't really know how that translates to the Premier League. But Ellis Sims, man.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one guy that you look at and you think, you know, maybe he's earned a shot here or there. But yeah.
Mm. So there's definitely some positions. I wonder how many of these positions where we're not very deep. Will we actually be assessing or addressing in January? I'm really curious about that. I feel like if anything, we're getting some loans. And I'm just curious who's going to be willing to loan us. I think a loan with an obligation to buy later mm-hmm. could be interesting, the way they're talking about with ISCO, if that's actually a thing. If that, I mean, who knows? We don't know.
Yeah.
The unicorn hasn't walked through the door to where and dropped ITK, blessed ITK knowledge. So when the unicorn strolls through, we shall find out.
I've bought into the whole ISCO thing. It's like we're getting ISCO in January.
I've been an ISCO fan for like forever. So if we get him, and I've been like Hamas Rodriguez fan for a long time. So if we get him too, I'm just like melting. Right. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, Times Square needs to get do they have the art yet for ISCO January? Get him on the boat in Miami. Get him on the sign on the boat in Miami.
Oh man, I'd be so fine with that. Oh. So Michael Bone's other question was, why is our defense unorganized now after the international break? And I think we've addressed this already. Number one, we had a red card in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. That happened. Number two, we had an injury in the middle of that. And number three, we had a center back pairing slide in the most recent match. Keane had been playing left center back for like the whole season. And now he pops over to the right and we bring in Holgate, who hasn't played with him for a while. So right. I think there's very logical reasons for them not to be organized. It's just a perpetually shifting personnel. We need some stability there. And I think we'll see the organization. You know, you want like little things to change, you know, every few weeks rather than every week, right?
Right. And we talked earlier about tactics, and not really my strong suit, but I think you could see though in those first few matches that we were winning, that you know, we love the new dynamic Everton, the new attacking Everton, right? But are we sacrificing? Are we sacrificing some shape in the back with that, and just getting ourselves exposed at times? And we did miss Holgate obviously, because he brings, you know, that athleticism and that ability that, you know, our other guys probably don't have. But so I don't know. I don't know if it's a personnel thing, if it's a style thing, if it's just because it's really gone on all season, because we've been giving up goals since the start of the year. So it's not like it's unique to the last three matches. But it might've been, it's a little different. Maybe the reason why we gave up goals in the last three matches is the circumstances are different than they were in the first five. But the fact is we're giving up goals. We're giving up too many goals, and we have since the start of the year. Right. So Carl is going to have to find some solutions to that.
I'll be psyched to see our normal starters and maybe the exact same defensive starters returning for the next match to start getting that consistency, right?
Yeah, you know, you've got Ben Godfrey getting fit, Jeep Amin.
Hey, that's a whole different world. Oh my gosh. My kid's been asking about by the way, I think he said you could say his name three different ways. You say it a different way than I do, but you're right too. So I'm not correcting when I say Gbamin. I'm just saying that's the way I say it to my kid. But so we know we're both right here. But that's a whole different. My kid asked me, "What's going on with Gbamin?" And I'm like, "Well, I've always been under the impression sometime in November." So anytime now, maybe. So, right. So yeah, be cool to see. That's a whole different world. We got him to fit. That's crazy. I'm pulling hard for that guy. How many injury setbacks has he had? Holy crap. Everton dot Tunnel, maybe it's Tunnel, Tunnel, asks, is Keane worth recalling in January? I think he could help the team, but I'm going to say no, because I think he's where he wants to be right now, and his attitude is going to be much better where he is. So that's my opinion.
100% agree. I think this is a good thing for Everton, and we'll see how it plays out. But this is a good thing for Moise Keane, and it's a good thing for Everton. And he's still a very young player. But seeing what he's doing there it's really encouraging for me. I know a lot of people are saying, he's not coming back.
He might not be, you know, but which could be good for us financially. Right.
But if he does, he's going to come back a better player, a more polished player, and above all, a much more confident player. And that's the point of a loan, especially for a young guy, right? That's the whole reason you do it.
I just wish he'd go to a club he wouldn't fall in love with, though. Put him on PSG, he's just spoiled. He ain't going to want to come back anywhere.
Right, yeah.
I mean, geez, because I still have hopes he's going to play for us again. I really do.
Me too. You know, I think he's a good young man. I love his personality. I love his energy. I think he'd be great here, and I want to see him reach his peak with Everton. Mm-hmm. But we all understand the reality that might not be the case. But he's where he needs to be, and if he is going to come back, if he does come back to Everton and he does well, this loan spell is going to be, you could credit this loan spell as to why that all kind of worked out.
As soon as I heard about it, I had a positive reaction to it, because I was like, think about it. Think about how many games PSG is going to be ahead and being able to put in whoever they want. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? I mean, they could play him a ton of games, and he could end up getting tons of chances to be in front of the goal, being played brilliant balls, and he could be building confidence, because that's a big part, man, just being confident in front of goal, getting used to it. You know, that's a big thing. So
his first goal from last season was still probably my highlight of last season. Well, that and the Walcott winner against Watford was pretty good.
It was a good one.
But Moise Keane's first goal was just – that was tremendous.
I mean, it's just certain players I've been wishing they were able to dance more at Goodison, and he's one of them. Mm-hmm. Him and Yuri Mina, I just want to see them because they're my favorites to watch dance. They're just great. Yeah.
Gotta like Gerald.
So, by the way, all these questions are from Instagram. I neglected to mention that earlier. C57 2.0 asks, do you rate Luka Dean in the top 10 left backs in the world at the moment? And full disclosure, I have not ranked all of the world's left backs lately.
Probably couldn't name them.
However, I would say you can make an argument for him being at least top three in the Premier League. In the Premier League, I think you can make an argument for the Premier League being one of the top leagues in the world. So I think, yes, you can rate Luka Dean in the top 10 left backs in the world. I think you can do that. And I don't even have to rattle off the other names. I think just by simple process of elimination, it makes sense that I could say that.
Yeah. I was going to say you could make an argument for him being the best left back in England.
Mm-hmm. You can.
Certainly, as you said, in the top three.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, who all might be on that top 10 list worldwide, but yeah, that in the best league in the world, you can make an argument that he is the best left back in the best league in the world. So
yeah,
that kind of answers the question.
Yeah. All I know is Alphonso Davies is up there somewhere too. Just saying. which I also think is cool because he came from MLS, you know, whatever, but, right. Almost finished here. D. Soltarov, 23, asks, realistic league position at the end of the season?
Oh. I could see us finishing fifth.
Okay. So I was going to give a range because I'm a cheater. And mm-hmm. I would say a realistic range is from third through eighth.
Yeah,
I'm fine. I think that's realistic. And if it happened, I would not be completely blown away at this point with a place. Now, if it's below eighth, I am extremely disappointed with the team that we have. If it's above third, I am blown away and ecstatic by the fact that I feel like we have done that with a very thin squad, you know, with a team full of starters and not a lot of bench, you know? So,
yeah. And I've said it before.
It makes a lot of sense to me, by the way.
Yeah. I'll stick with this. Anything more than Europe would be just kind of icing on the cake. Anything less than Europe would be a big disappointment. So, anywhere in between one and six or seven, I'm fine.
All right, here's,
here's the deal. If they want to win the league, I'm not going to discourage them.
Yeah, go ahead, guys. Knock yourselves out.
we're allowed to dream. What's the harm in that?
I'm just going to.
But no, I think for this club, and this is from a very serious standpoint, I think it's very important for Everton Football Club to be playing European football. Mm-hmm. I think it's the bare minimum expectation we should have as fans. Mm-hmm. And I think with our resources, with our history, I don't think there's any reason. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have a poor season at some point. It also doesn't mean that you might have an exceptionally good season and find yourself in Champions League places. But I think for Everton Football Club, as a fan base and as the club, I think that should be our bare minimum expectation, is that we are competing, if not achieving, European football every year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's reasonable to expect that we do that this year.
Yes.
People get enamored with us being top of the league. And they can talk about Champions League. They can talk about all they – but I just think that's our goal. This year is Europe, and that's it. And so,
all right. And to be, I just realized I'm going to stick firm. I'm not just going to say a range. I'm going to say we're going to be fourth because I don't want anybody to call me wishy-washy Jerry. Because nobody calls me that anymore. It's been years. So, yeah, just there we go. Last question, and I'm going to handle this one. I got this one. Okay. 18 Tom 78 asks, is water wet? And I'm just going to tell you, Tom, no. It's a lie. Moving on. Anthony Gordon, final word on Anthony Gordon. We need to discuss this 19-year-old fellow, 6 foot tall, 150 pounds. Guy has posted all these videos of himself working out. And he's just, you know, I point him out to my kids and I'm like, that's what you got to do, guys. That's what you got to do. See the guy training? See all the stuff he's doing? And he came back and he's just like ripped. And he's like this, and he's serious about playing. He is serious, so much so that you hear some words that maybe he went to Carlo and said, hey, man, can I play, man? Can I play, Carlo? And he hadn't really gotten much of a look in. And, you know, we mentioned off air, we mentioned David Hughes, who used to come on Toffee Blues all the time. He did an article recently and was talking about it's something I mentioned last week, actually, that Anthony Gordon is the closest thing to a like-for-like replacement you got for Richarlison when it comes, like, on the surface, more direct, right? A direct player, not afraid to take players head-on, electric, you know? He's electric. He's always constantly trying to make something happen. And then he had this recent run with no Richarlison in the squad, and Anthony Gordon does not get that look in. So, and instead of playing recently against United, he plays for the U-23s and seems like a head above, you know what I mean? So it's a weird situation and we've got into this a little bit earlier. So is there a chance that Carlo's a man manager, right? That's what we're under the impression that he's this man manager. Do you think there's something do you think it could be a consistency with training issue week in, week out, some of these other players being a little more consistent at training, and maybe that's what's given them the nod?
And I mentioned this earlier that, in my experience, if a guy who you think should be playing isn't playing, mm-hmm. a lot of times it's because of what is transpiring during the week. There's no way to know. And I know Carlo's been asked about him. I don't know if anyone has asked Carlo directly, you know, why is Anthony Gordon not playing? I know the story came out where he went, and it sounded like he didn't go to Carlo's office and say, you know, I should be playing.
Was it asked?
He went to Carlo's office reportedly and said, what do I need to do?
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, my question would have been of Carlo is, well, you know, what'd you tell him? Mm-hmm. What did he need to do to play? But I don't know if anyone, I didn't see Carlo address it in that way. Mm-hmm. I think he just said kind of the stock response of, well, that's what I want my players to say. Hey, you know, I want players who want to play.
Right.
Okay. Well, of course, you know, you want players who want to play. But yeah, and you go to the office and you say, you know, one of the greatest managers in world football, and you're 19, and you go to his door and you say, what do I need to do to play? Carlo Ancelotti, if that's the way it happened, Carlo Ancelotti would have at that point absolutely told Anthony Gordon what he has to do in order to play.
Yeah.
And he's not going to tell us that, and he's not going to tell reporters that. But I guarantee you he told Anthony Gordon what he needs to do to play. I don't remember when that meeting took place.
I definitely don't know. I don't know if it was. My memory these days is crap. So I definitely.
I don't know if it was during this three games or what, but the fact that he hasn't, whatever Carlo's answer was, the fact that he's still not playing means that he hasn't.
It was during, by the way.
Whatever it was before. He needs to do to play, whatever he needs to do to play, he hasn't done yet. I don't know. Yeah. Obviously it's all speculation because, you know, he's still a very young player, but he seems to have a good head on his shoulders. He seems to be a good kid. He obviously approaches games the right way. Mm-hmm. And what I like about him is he could be sulking. He could be playing for the U23s and sulking. No, he's out there dominating the match.
Right.
That says a lot, because a young guy like that who feels like he deserves to be on the pitch at Goodison with the first team is stuck playing U23s. He could easily just kind of go through the motions. He doesn't. He goes out there and dominates. So he's got the quality. He seems to have a good approach and a good head on his shoulders. So I'll admit it's a mystery, but, you know, and I don't want to just say, well, we should trust Carlo Ancelotti. I mean, that's the easy answer, because we probably should. But yeah, I would really kind of, you know, the curiosity is kind of killing me. Like, I do want to know, like I would, if I was in a professional capacity at Carlo's news conference, I would ask him, why is Anthony Gordon not playing?
Mm. And do you think you would get that stock? You'd get that stock answer.
Well, that's the thing is if you ask, why is Anthony Gordon not playing? It's kind of hard to provide a stock answer. You know what I mean? I mean, you have to answer, even if you give like some sort of canned answer, it's going to tell you something.
So if he says something to the effect
you know, I don't know. Like, he's going to tip off something if you.
I love this. This is devious, Jeff. I like this. This is.
I'm just curious. And I think, you know, the fans are obviously curious why this kid isn't playing, especially given the situation we were in the last three matches. But now Richarlison is back. So, you know. But
supposedly that meeting happened before all of this, like earlier in the season, like it was before this three game stretch. So I don't know, man. I was lucky enough I got to have a conversation with the Wake Forest head coach Bobby Muse, who's actually a really big Liverpool supporter, by the way. And constantly giving me crap about how my kids wear Everton gear all the time. But I was talking to him, and he was talking to me about the one of his things, his very key things that he looks for as a coach, is consistency in practice and bringing the same mentality, the same effort, the same sharp edge to every single training session. And the players who don't if you're not as sharp as the other players every single time, and you're not consistent, there may be the most talented players. There are players right now playing in MLS that he was talking about that he said didn't play till their junior, senior year because of this very reason. And we're talking about one manager, and it's a little bit of insight into the way one manager views things. But he said it's a really common thing, especially in America, by the way. He said in Europe, kids are much more used, and players are much more used to the day in, the day out of being like, you know, playing, practicing like there's blood in the water, and you're, you know, sharks with blood in the water. You know what I mean? Just it's that intensity every single practice, that same sharp edge. And it is also concentration. So, you know, you think of a player like Anthony Gordon, who seems like a pro as a kid. And I'm betting you money there's nothing that's discernible on his end, but it could be something little. Maybe his frustration with not playing is leading to little mistakes during practice. Could be anything. So
right.
That's the kind of stuff that a manager is privy to. You're right, man. every single thing we say here is going to be speculation. All we can do is maybe throw up some options and say, hey, we're just trying to, I mean, Carlo Ancelotti is a smart guy. He's a man manager. And if he's got one player that he thinks is giving him something in training that another player is not giving, he's going to give that player an opportunity. Right.
Right.
And it may not even be, it could be a combination with other players. It may not be effort, may not even be concentration. Yep. It could be chemistry. So
the other thing too, is he may, like, it's not, a lot of times managers think, you know what, I got a chance to get a lot more out of this player than I'm getting. Mm. It's not that what he's giving me isn't good or maybe even great. But he's like, you know what, if I approach this kid the right way, there's a lot more in there I can get. Then I'm going to unleash him. At that point, he's going to be ready to give me, the great, you know, every time he goes out there. But again, it's just speculation, but I'm, you know, just trying to, like, from my experience, just kind of how managers think, especially with young players. If this is a veteran player, it's a lot easier to kind of speculate, you know, but a young guy that he's trying to mold, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
he's obviously trying to get more out of Anthony Gordon than he's getting, but I think we should probably not assume that he's not getting anything from Anthony Gordon. Right. He might be getting a lot from Anthony Gordon. He just thinks he can get more.
Right.
And
that's a good point. I like that.
But again, that doesn't really answer the question of why.
But at the same time, you're providing possibility. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're kind of providing some potential insight. So, I mean, everything we've said might be totally wrong, but at least what we're doing is we're giving up some potentials.
You also have other players, obviously. You have the other players that are like, well, hey, wait a minute. You know, I see this kid in training every week, and I know what I'm giving in training every week. And if Carlos says, well, you know, Anthony, I'm going to throw Anthony Gordon in there, then you have – that goes back to being a man manager, and it doesn't matter the sport or the country. You know, all coaches go through the same kind of juggling act of kind of massaging the egos. But it is important though, because you're trying to get something out of those players too. Mm-hmm. And if you just throw a 19-year-old kid out there because the fans like him, or the fans want you to put him out there. And you got some veteran players who've been around for a very long time who know what they're giving in training every week.
Right.
And they're like, hey, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got a chemistry issue.
Yes, you do.
So it's not as simple as we kind of make it out to be at times. But again, I'm not disagreeing at all with the people that are saying, because I'm among them. Like,
yeah.
Let's get Anthony Gordon in there and see what he can do, because I love his style of play and I love what he brings. And but the good thing is he's got plenty of time, and if Carlo develops him right, he's going to be an even better player for Everton when he gets the opportunity. So
I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I was among those too. I'd love to see him play. It's just complex. It's a complex situation. I have a tendency to try to not assume incompetence from other people. I just kind of assume that there's, I don't know. I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt. And so this is one of those where I feel like I like to assume that everybody's working hard, doing the job they're supposed to do. And Carlo sees some certain you know, chemistry-based stuff. He's like, this is the best combination that I see is working right now, and this is what I'm thinking. I don't think it's probably not any fault of Anthony Gordon's, and it's probably not a fault of Carlo's.
I picture when Carlo walks on Crosby Beach that the sand just kind of clears a path for him as he walks along Crosby Beach. So, you know, I'm not one to question Carlo Ancelotti. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we may have to wait a little while anyway for Anthony Gordon. Even if he was playing the next match, it's a little while before the next one because we've got the super fun international break, everybody. We all look forward to it.
How many guys do we have playing going to their clubs?
Man,
hopefully not many.
I don't know. It just
I don't want to have to spend the break stressing about somebody tearing their ACL.
All I know is Alon is with Brazil along with Richarlison, so I didn't even expect him to be doing that. And so there's like, they're all out there. Luka Dean is out there. I mean, I know some players like weren't able to join their squad because of certain COVID-based restrictions.
But I'm glad for Richarlison because obviously he hasn't been playing. So that's
get him a little warm. That would be cool, but it's just
as long as he's fit and he doesn't. It's just
holding my breath for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's like the tweets that came out with Dean. You know, he had that great assist in the one match, and then they're like, oh, he's walking slowly off the.
Yep.
And then you go through a few hours of panic before it's like, oh, it's nothing serious. It's like, I don't need that. I'm too old.
International. There was a time.
I want a whole squad against Fulham. I want to see everyone. I want to see our entire squad perfectly fit, intact, and walk out and blast Fulham. That's what I want to see.
I'd love to see.
Things never seem to work out.
Love to see some opportunities to more opportunities where we're actually pressing their keeper some. Let's challenge their keeper a little more than three times. Yeah. We didn't challenge De Gea much at all this past week. So let's just bombard this dude. So anyway, we are at the end of the show here, Jeff. We have finished in just a shade under a decade. Anyway, so I did want to say thanks to Jeff Wallner for joining us. Jeff, do you want to do some plugging really quick before I go into my ending spiel here?
No, I think no. I appreciate you having me on. It was a ton of fun, and hopefully we can do it again at some point.
All right. So, Jeff, I definitely would appreciate you coming back on again. You're such a super nice guy. I appreciate your stories. And your, your insight. It was just really cool talking to you and not having to Twitter stalk you from afar. So,
by the way, if you want to follow me on Twitter, like if you know, you're quarantined, you're in lockdown and you have, you know, absolutely no other options for social interaction, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Wallner. And occasionally I will say something that is interesting or thought provoking. And every once in a while, funny. That's the most important. Those are the most important tweets. But
it should be below his face. His Twitter handle should be below his face, just there where normally it would say Kazoo. It'll be his Twitter. It should be right there on him. Okay. Yeah. So very cool. Well, Jeff, thank you so much.
All my friends in Liverpool who are going on lockdown again. So hang in there, thinking of you, stay safe.
All right. So ladies and gentlemen, this has been Jeff Wallner on with Jerry Gibson. Let me go ahead and get my spiel stuff out of the way. If you are not already subscribed to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel, we'd really appreciate it if you were, or if you want to check out our podcast, it's both podcast and channel. Subscribe to both those. We'd really appreciate it. If you could follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you want to check out the website, there's all kinds of all things Everton, basically, analysis on there by some cool contributors that appear on this channel and on these podcasts. Last but not least here, I wrote a book. It's a kid's book, Randolph the Christmas Moose. It's about a moose who's a runner. He wears a headband. And it's a moose who's a runner, and it's Christmas, and he saves Christmas at some point, perhaps. I don't know. I'm awful at plugging this thing, but I'm trying to keep doing it. So, concept came from Toppy Blues. So, yeah, I have a part Max and part Terry to thank for this stuff. So, anyway, Toppy Blues made my children's book. Huh? Where can you buy it? Amazon. Sorry, my wife was just like, where can you buy it, Jerry? Amazon. She's right. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, thanks so much for your time, everybody. Jeff, again, good to meet you, and yeah, let's have a good international break where no one gets hurt.
That's right.
All right, man, take care, buddy. Hopefully talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good.
For everybody else out there, have a good international break. Stay safe. All right, bye.